Due to historic anti-Semitism, many Catholics in response have embraced Zionism today. However, in recent years, due to dominant Zionism, some Catholics have creeped towards anti-Semitism. How is a Catholic supposed to navigate these tricky waters? That's what we're going to talk about today on Crisis Point. Hello, I'm Eric Sims, your host, editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. Before we get started, as always, smash that like button. Let other people know about our channel. Subscribe to it. Don't bother hitting the notify button because you have a life outside the internet. I haven't said that in a while, and I realized that the other day, so I wanted to remind people, yes, subscribe to our channel. You don't need to hit the notify button, though. Also, you can subscribe to our email newsletter. That's the best way to find out what's going on at Crisis. Just go to crisismagazine.com, put your email address in. And you can follow us on social media at Crisis Mag. Okay, so also, last thing is, if you're watching this live, feel free to jump in the live chat. At the end of the chat, I'll try to answer some questions, address some comments, things of that nature. Okay, so first of all, I suspect there's a chance this video will either get kicked off of YouTube or shadow banned or something like that. So hopefully people will see it. Otherwise, we will have it on Odyssey, and I'll probably upload it to Rumble. We've been having some problems with our Rumble channel, but I'll upload it there as well. Just make sure. So the past week, Crisis has, we've been called both Zionist supporters as well as unhinged anti-Semites. And so I feel like, okay, we must be doing something right or something wrong. last week, we ran an article by David Larson that was talking about a Nazi that makes a bad Catholic. Got a lot of pushback for that. People saying that, oh, we must be a bunch of Zionists, you know, whatever the case, whatever adjective you want to use there. And then yesterday we ran an article by Jason Jones that was arguing against what the state of Israel is doing today in Gaza, very strongly arguing against it. And so we were called unhinged anti-Semites. And then I had an article today that wasn't really about this directly, but about kind of these issues, navigating these issues where we have a dominant narrative typically pushed by the elites, by the left, and then what's the alternative? And my concern is sometimes the alternative is just as false as the dominant narrative being told by the elites. And that's kind of what we're going to be talking about today. I realize some people will act like, oh, you're just being on the fence. You refuse to take one side or the other. Okay, guilty as charged, I guess. But I do think for Catholics, we do have to navigate the streams of the narratives. And just because somebody is against a certain narrative doesn't mean we're for them and vice versa. Now, I will be honest. I'm not that interested in discussing these topics typically. And the reason for that is I feel like it's almost impossible to have a good discussion online about it. Maybe if I sat down with somebody I was friendly with, we could have a good long discussion that I would actually enjoy. But an online discussion, either on social media or even a podcast form like this, is very difficult because what happens is typically you get flooded by a bunch of usually anonymous accounts that just kind of push. They're not really interested in arguing. They're more just making ad hominems. They're posting up quotes that, you know, taken out of context or even not just like and act like that's their entire argument. It just becomes a means for a rational and reasonable discussion. Also, it's kind of hard to gauge support because I know certain communities are very online, and so they're gonna appear a lot stronger than they really are potentially. But I do think this is an important issue. I mean, obviously, what's going on in the Middle East right now with the state of Israel at war with Gaza, there's a lot of discussion about the status of Judaism, how Catholics should view Judaism. Like I said, I've gotten a lot of heat from both sides at Crisis because we've run articles very critical of the state of Israel, but also articles that are very critical of anti-Semitism. And so that's kind of why I want to address this here. Now, I do think it's important to define our terms to get started. I think first and foremost, let's just say, what do I mean by Zionism and anti-Semitism? Because I think that's important because both terms can be very catch-all, can be used in various ways. So I just want to define my terms as I'm using them today. The first one is Zionism. Historically, what Zionism simply means It's the political movement to establish a nation state for the Jewish people that began in the 19th century, really latter half of the 19th century. And so that's what really Zionism is in a modern context. Now, it also can mean, it can apply more kind of a philo-Semitic attitude, a love of Jews and the Jewish people. And so it doesn't necessarily always mean the political aspects of Zionism, but just in the sense of supporting the Jewish people, often without question, often without ever being willing to criticize perhaps what some Jews are doing and things of that nature. So that's kind of Zionism. And what I'm really specifically talking about when I talk about Catholics is theological support for Zionism. So like I said, Zionism is a political movement in the modern world. It's a political movement to establish a nation state for the Jewish people, which of course happened. But when it started, obviously the desire was to make it happen. Now we do have a nation state of Israel. And when I really talk about Zionism in a Catholic context is Catholics who support that, not just for political reasons, which is one thing, but for theological reasons, arguing that there's a Catholic theological support for the nation state of Israel. So that's kind of my definition of the term Zionism, what I'm kind of talking about in general. So Zionism, also like a soft Zionism, a philo-Semitism, where you a love of the Jewish people. The second is, so my other definition is anti-Semitism. Now, we all know this term, it's like racism in a lot of ways. It's been abused. It's a loaded term. It's often used to shut down any arguments. I mean, when people said that Jason Jones yesterday in his article was anti-Semitic, that's not an argument. That's just simply trying to shut down the argument, trying to shut him up. The irony is, now Jason doesn't want to advertise this, but he has literally been involved in saving Jews and helping Jews throughout the world. Through his charitable organization, he literally saved Jews, rescued Jews in Afghanistan after the American withdrawal. And so just kind of saying he's an anti-Semite because he's strongly against the actions of the state of Israel when it comes to Gaza right now is just a way to shut people up. What do I mean when I say anti-Semitism? Well, first of all, the obvious example of anti-Semitism, the textbook definition, is a racial hatred of Jews. Basically, believing Jews as a race are inferior to other races in this hatred of the Jewish people as a race. That's classic anti-Semitism. That's what really we mean. But I would also say, like I had Zionism, it's an umbrella term. I also think anti-Semitism can be an umbrella term as well. So an irrational or unreasonable suspicion of Jewish power, for example. Now, you might not want to call it anti-Semitism. I'm not saying it's the same thing as straight up anti-Semitism, but I am saying that it is it's a problem. It's a problem from a Catholic perspective. So while it's not anti-Semitism, maybe textbook definition, it is an issue. And we can debate the term. Like, for example, I understand not wanting to use the term anti-Semitism for that. I get that because of the way it's been abused. Perhaps, like, I've noticed some people say noticers, like people who notice Jewish power, Jewish influence in society. Maybe that's the term we could use, noticers. I'm actually open to terms. I don't want it to be a big debate about terminology. I think that gets silly because we start to debate the grammatical and linguistic definitions. Like, also, like, I know some people, they don't like anti-Semitism because, of course, it's not just the Jews who are Semites. But we all know, in modern terms, the phrase anti-Semite means against Jews. I get that that's not technically accurate. But again, those debates, I think, are just end up going away from the issue. So when I'm talking about anti-Semitism, I'm talking about the umbrella term. You could also, the noticers, whatever the case, whatever you want to call it. I don't mind, like I said, using a different term. But just the idea that people who notice or who are suspicious of Jewish power. So that's my definition, what I'm talking about when I talk about this today. I also want to kind of break down the demographics a little bit, what generally seems to be the demographics. When it comes to Zionism, this is very prevalent among mostly older people, like most boomers, baby boomers. I'm Gen X, by the way. Everybody calls me a boomer whenever I take their side, but you know, I'm Gen X. But the idea, older people, typically over the age of 40, 50, it's not just boomers, they're typically much more lean towards a Zionistic viewpoint. In the Catholic Church, in America at least, I mean, most bishops and priests, if not almost all of them, you would fall in the Zionist category, or at least that direction. I will say this, though. Pope Francis doesn't seem to fall into that. I mean, just by his words and stuff, I wouldn't put him this in that camp. It's the like a soft Zionism or philo-Semitism is kind of the default for most Catholics. Let's be honest. That's the majority. Also, it's both political parties in this country. I mean, neither political party, you could say is not, I mean, they're both Zionists. So that's kind of the demographics there. Among the anti-Semitism noticer crowd, whatever you want to call it, it's mostly younger. It's very difficult to gauge the size, however, because it's very online, which kind of is in keeping with it being younger people. You don't really hear almost at all in real life. Now some would argue that's because they're afraid they might lose their job because of the dominant Zionist narrative. Whatever the case may be, the reality is it's very, very rare to hear somebody in real life talk about this and be suspicious of Jewish power, be anti, you know, and that aspect. So it's hard to gauge how prevalent it is. I would say it seems to be more in the Catholic world, more prevalent among traditional Catholics than like conservative, obviously progressive Catholics. And so, like I said, I'm not really sure, but it is definitely, it definitely exists. How big it is it 1% of Catholics, trag Catholics? Is it 5%? I don't know. I don't think it's much more than maybe 10% or something like that, just because just in real life, you just never hear it. And so I think if it was much more dominant, you'd hear it more. So kind of doesn't matter that much how dominant it is. It exists though. Okay, so that's kind of all in way of introduction. So my 12-minute introduction there. Now what I want to do is actually go through Zionism a bit and anti-Semitism a bit and talk about them and kind of the problems with them. With Zionism, I feel like there is no such thing as an expert on the history of Zionism. The reason I say that is it's so super complicated. So it originated, the modern movement of Zionism originated in the late 19th century. And really it was a response to an increased anti-Semitism in Europe, particularly in Russia. There were some very vicious anti-Semitic pogroms in Russia where they were, you know, killing Jews, persecuting them mercilessly, driving them out. And so this was going on in the late 19th century. And we have to be honest, there's been anti-Semitic movements in Europe for over 1,000 years. To pretend like they don't exist is just ridiculous. That doesn't mean it's always been that way or in every country. Like it's always been like the Jews have succeeded in Europe throughout history as well as been persecuted. So, but the fact is there has been persecution. It was very great in Russia in the late 19th century. And so because of this, let me take one step back. Again, it's so complicated. I'll probably jump around here a lot. Among Jews, the response to this persecution over the ages has varied. It's not like they've all thought the same thing. Some have very much wanted to assimilate into society so they wouldn't be persecuted. Others wanted to stay very firm in their faith. Others wanted to try to escape areas in which the persecution occurred. There wasn't one answer among the Jews of like, okay, this is how we're going to respond to persecution. But in the late 19th century, there was a movement, a growing movement of the idea of the Jews, we need our own nation state. We need a place that's ours, that we run so that we can have a place that we're free from persecution. And this is mostly among European Jews, because in America, the persecution was nowhere near, I mean, there wasn't, I mean, not that there wasn't any anti-Semitism in America, of course there was, but it wasn't like it was in Europe. And so among Jews, particularly in Europe, there was a growing movement for a state, and it was called Zionism, is what it was kind of labeled. And here's the thing about this. It's not like all the Jews jumped on board with this at the time. In fact, if you look at in the late 19th century, for example, it was very rare. It was very a minority opinion among the Jewish people in support of this idea, the Zionistic movement. And so it's not true. And even today, you can't claim that, like, if you're Jewish, you support the Zionist cause, the nation of Israel. There are Jews that don't support it, that oppose Israel today. So it's very complicated. I think this is important because of the fact that we kind of equate sometimes, okay, to be friendly to Jews means you're pro-Zionism. You're pro the Israeli state. That's just simply not historically true or even true today. Now, the movement for Zionism grew in the early 20th century. After World War I, particularly, you saw a big increase because the Balfour Declaration and other things. I'm not going to go into all the details here. You can research it. Now, I would argue, I just want to take an aside real quick. I personally think when you research this stuff, you should read as much as possible various sources. I mean, the problem is like, you know, everybody's opinionated about it. And so nobody's going to be completely objective. But I do think we should try to look at all the sources. But the point is after World War I, what happened was the Ottoman Empire fell. The Allied forces, particularly Britain and France, were carving up the Middle East. And the Jews basically got an agreement from the British people to try to help establish a Jewish state in the Middle East. Now, actually, I want to bring up one thing. Originally, in the Zionist cause, it wasn't always assumed it would be Palestine. There was like a movement, for example, that was floated out to maybe establish a Jewish nation state in Uganda. And some other, and I think another place was like in South America or somewhere like that. I can't remember. I think, in upstate New York, there was a movement to potentially set up a Jewish like state or something in upstate New York. So even the idea that it had to be in Palestine wasn't unanimous, even among the Zionists. But ultimately, that's, of course, where it led. And so after World War I, you see a growth in the Zionist movement, a growth in real, actual Jewish people moving to Palestine. There had been Jewish people there before, but very small numbers. They started moving more and more there to Palestine. So this is before World War II. This is before the rise of Nazi Germany. This is before the Holocaust. And it's just a mess. I mean, there's no other way to put it. In the 1920s, that era, because there were Arabs living there, of course, and they weren't too happy. And they were under the Ottoman Empire. Now they're under either the French or the British, depending on what part of Palestine they're in. They're not happy about this. They actually briefly set up their own Kingdom of Syria that gets taken down by France. I mean, it's so complicated during this era. And again, during this time, not all Jews were supportive, just like today, but even less so then, of the Zionist cause. And so then, of course, after the Holocaust, after Nazi Germany and Holocaust, now we get a real, like, the worldwide support in a sense for a nation state for the Jews. And of course, it's implemented after World War II. I'm not going to go the whole history there, but the point is now we actually have a nation state of Israel. And so, but the truth is, I think that I don't claim to be an expert on this because I actually don't think there's any expert. I think some people know more than others. I think you get like the Ben Shapiro type who have a very specific narrative they want to give, and they leave out lots of information. And I think narratives against the Zionist cause that probably do the same as well. But the point is that I would say that the problems in the modern Middle East today really trace back to World War I and the Allied powers kind of taking over the Middle East and carving it up and saying, okay, we're going to put the Jews here. We're going to have Arabs here. I mean, at one point there was the idea that the Zionist cause kind of made it that, yeah, Jews will move to Palestine, but they'll just be part of the existing government. They'll be part of that nation. They'll live together. They're not going to take over. But then it became, no, we're going to take over. And so ultimately, they did take over a section, and then the Arabs, who had lived there for a very long time, were not happy about that, and so they resisted. And so it's just been a mess ever since then. And essentially, what happened was Britain and America then came in, and a lot of the Western world came in support for Israel. And in fact, in America, it became just complete unapologetic and total support for the nation of Israel. And this this really did cause been a cause of a lot of problems. And we obviously we're in the middle literally of a war right now. If you want, I don't even want to call it a war because it's mostly Israel kind of just taking out Gaza. There's not a lot of pushback because there's not ability to have a lot of pushback right now. So one of the biggest issues, I think, from a Catholic perspective in this complete support for Israel is this the relationship between biblical Israel and modern Israel. And here, in as simple as possible, I'm going to explain the relationship between biblical Israel and modern Israel. None. There's none. Yes, it's physically in the same area. Yes, it has the same name. But there's no actual relationship between the two. Because the nation of Israel, the biblical state of Israel, it fell thousands of years ago. And from a Catholic perspective, it rose again in the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church is the state of Israel in a certain sense. Theologically, at least, it is Israel. And so in that sense, we can't say that when people talk about they have a right to this land or they have the right, you know, Jews have a right to this land, the Arabs have a right to this land. I just don't think it's that simple. I do understand why the Jewish people pick Palestine. Don't get me wrong. In their minds, that area is the chosen, you know, the land for the chosen people. It is the promised land. I totally understand. It makes sense why they want that land as their when they said, okay, let's look around the globe, find an area for a nation state. We'll look at Uganda, upstate New York, somewhere in South America. Ultimately, I think we all know where it was going to end up. It was going to end up in the Holy Land in Palestine because that is what they consider their land. At the same time, Arabs lived there for a very, very long time, and they consider it their land. In fact, they were the ones who actually controlled, you know, they were living in it when the Zionists came, when the Jews came. So I understand their perspective. I also would say, I think Christians have a certain stake in the Holy Land. I mean, we were there, we were kicked out by the Muslims during the Crusades. I mean, I'm sorry, we were trying to take it over by the Crusades. We were kicked out before the Crusades. We were kicked out when Islam grew. We were there. I mean, we were kind of the inheritors after the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire, of course, controlled it for a long time. We inherited it, the Catholic Church, the Christians, I mean. And then Islam kicked us out forcibly by violence, by war. And then later, the Crusades, we tried to retake it. We took it kind of, sort of, for a little while. And then we were kicked out again. So there's a lot of claims on this land. And that, of course, is the whole problem. That's where we have the problem. But I think acting like it's definitely for some biblical theological reasons, it's the Jews' land. I don't think that stands up to the test, the theological Catholic test, at least. I think ultimately it's not their land per se, although, like I said, I understand why they consider it that, and I also understand completely why the Jews want a nation state, why they want a land. After all the persecutions they've gone through for so long, I get it. I don't blame them for that at all. But I don't think it's like they have an intrinsic right to Palestine, and that's the end of the argument, because of the fact that in the Old Testament, you know, Israeli Jews, they controlled the land. I just don't think that works in a Catholic theological or even political aspect. So ultimately, Zionism, you can tell I'm pretty critical of Zionism, but yet I also understand in a lot of ways the defense of it. Ultimately, I think as a Catholic, it's okay to support Israel for political reasons. I personally have a lot of problems with the modern state of Israel politically. Like, I think it's what it's doing in Gaza right now. I agree with Jason Jones. I think what it's doing in Gaza right now is awful. It's horrific. Again, I don't want to get into linguistic debates because could you call it a genocide what they're doing in Gaza? As soon as we say that word, then we get into debates about what the word means. I do think what they're doing there is horrible, immoral, horrific. But I do think a Catholic can support Israel, the nation, modern state of Israel, particularly as if they see it as a hedge against Muslim domination. If they see it as a way to kind of keep Muslim domination in check, and that's their argument, I might disagree with it politically, but I think it's legitimate for a Catholic to hold it. That's not something a Catholic cannot hold. it's not a theologically problematic attitude. I do think if they then support theologically and say, as Catholics, we have to support the nation state of Israel today, it is, you know, their biblical right and all these things, I think that's nonsense. But I do think you could make a political argument for Zionism, for the nation state of Israel, particularly as it comes to as a hedge, as a defense against Muslim dominance. Okay, so also, before I move on to anti-Semitism, I hosted a podcast, an interview, professor from Christendom, Matthew I can never pronounce his name. I meant to write it down. I forgot to. Anyway, search it up. It's about Catholic Zionism. And he does a very good job, I think, going against the theological arguments, for Catholic Zionism. So I recommend that as well. Okay. Now I want to talk about anti-Semitism, noticers, whatever you want to call it. Now, it's funny because I'm sure when I'm talking about, against Zionism, the online crowd isn't going to be as critical. They might even support me. But now when I talk against the anti-Semitism noticer crowd, all the bots will come after me. And I don't think you're all bots, by the way. I say that in love. but I do think it's like arguing. It's why I don't really have any desire anymore to argue about City Vacantism, because it's impossible to have a like rational, charitable disagreement argument online about it, because you just get flooded with anon accounts who, you know, post their memes of quotes from popes and in the past and all that stuff and think that they've won the argument, and you just can't really have a discussion. And I think this honestly happens. This is honestly what happens whenever you slight. I mean, we had an article at Crisis called Nazis Make Bad Catholics, and that caused the whole crowd to go up against this. I mean, if that statement isn't just obvious that Nazis make bad Catholics, I mean, you're wrong. I mean, look at, if you are sympathetic to Hitler, if you think something is good about Hitler, I'm talking about the more extreme, you know, people here in this crowd, then you're just wrong. You're on the wrong side of the Catholic Church. I mean, popes condemned it, saints condemned it. You know, the German Catholics condemned it. I mean, so it's not something that you can support. But let's talk a little bit more nuanced than just like opposing Hitler. What I've seen is an increase in Catholics who are noticing, to use that term, like conspiracies, Jewish conspiracies, Jewish power, Jewish influence in lots of places. And they will point to various examples. I know a classic one today is the guy who, one of the owners of Pornhub, is a rabbi. But although I'm pretty sure he's actually not a practicing rabbi, and I think he never was. But anyway, he's Jewish and he owns part of, or maybe he's the dominant owner, I don't know, of Pornhub. Obviously, there's Jewish influence in Hollywood. I mean, it's funny. I was reading a book recently that was not, pro-Jewish in a sense, about the history of Jews, and it was talking about Hollywood. It basically was founded by Jews. I mean, it was saying this straight. It wasn't saying this in a bad way or a good way. Just simply, that's the historical reality, that Hollywood is founded primarily by Jews. There's a lot of historical reasons for that. There's a lot of demographical reasons, sociological reasons, but that's just a fact. And so Catholics are noticing that and coming and making conclusions from that. I think that's where we're getting, that's where I'm kind of, that's what is where I'm disagreeing, is the conclusions, not necessarily noticing certain things. Like, yeah, there is a large Jewish influence, a disproportionate Jewish influence in the corridors of power. I mean, the fact is that the Israeli lobby in Washington has total control. And I mean, other than Thomas Massie, I hardly know any congressmen or senators or presidents who aren't swayed by it, at the very least, if not controlled by it. All these things I notice as well. But the question becomes, like, what are our conclusions from that? I think that's where the more anti-Semitic crowd, that's where we run into difficulties. And so, I mean, one example historically is the connection between the Bolsheviks and Judaism. A lot of people back in the day, and in some today, are basically like, Bolshevism is basically a Jewish conspiracy, a Jewish setup. And mostly they go because of Trotsky. You know, Trotsky obviously was a dominant figure in early, you know, the Russian Revolution, and he was Jewish. However, but if you notice, of the three power players in the early Russian Revolution, Lenin, Stalin, Trotsky, only Trotsky was Jewish. Yet that's the focus. And there were Jews involved in the Russian Revolution. However, there's things that just seem to be ignored, that there is a great amount of diversity within Judaism as far as how people practice. It's like Catholicism today. In fact, a lot of ways, these conspiracies remind me of the conspiracies that they talk about the Jesuits. How you get like anti-Catholic people talking about the Jesuits control everything. You find Jesuit influence there and stuff like that. And I feel like a lot of these Jewish conspiracy theories are very similar. They find Jewish influence everywhere, like just like the anti-Catholics find Jesuit influence everywhere. And also, but it even goes deeper that like there's no acknowledgement that Judaism is very diverse, more diverse even than Catholicism has been historically, but you can think of like Catholicism today. Joe Biden and Bishop Athanasius Schneider are both Catholic. I think we all know who watch this, who are following this podcast, know that that doesn't mean a lot. The differences between those two are probably greater than the similarities. And so just saying somebody is Jewish, like Trotsky was Jewish, or there was Jewish people involved in the creation of Hollywood or the Russian Revolution, it doesn't mean a whole bunch. What matters is, okay, was there an effort within Jewish people? Was it part of their Jewish faith and things like that? The fact is like, for example, the Bolshevik Revolution, like I said, Trotsky was a major figure, ultimately turned on the Jews, became very anti-Semitic, and lots of Jews were against it. And in fact, if you look at the actual biographies of the people who were very involved in it, they were non-Jewish Jews. What I mean by that, they were non-practicing. Often they were born Jewish, weren't even raised Jewish, or they rejected their Judaism, or they're atheists. Now, I know among the noticer crowd, they'll kind of dismiss that. They'll just simply say, well, Jews are, they're hiding it. They're really Jews. They're just kind of hiding it. I mean, that's just silly. It's like saying that, like, you know, Joe Biden's support of abortion, he's really just hiding his Catholicism, but Catholicism really is supporting abortion on demand, or that Athanasius Schneider, by opposing, is just hiding the real agenda, which is abortion on demand. It's just silly. It's nonsense. The fact is among Judaism, there's a lot of different types of Jews, practicing, non-practicing, and that's like the most generic categories, because within the practicing, there's a lot of different categories, but even within the non-practicing, there's a lot of different categories. And so I think that this is where I really start having problems, is that we start to think that because somebody was born Jewish, therefore it's part of a grand Jewish conspiracy. Now, the fact is that the Jewish people do have a culture, a common culture, like you'd say Catholicism has a common culture. It doesn't mean every Jew follows that, just like every Catholic doesn't follow Catholic culture. But it does influence them. And so, like, for example, I think the fact is the Jewish history, the history of the Jewish people, particularly the persecutions they've had to endure, how they've had to move constantly and therefore set up themselves in new places and make a life for themselves, it has created a culture of people who really are become very highly intelligent, hardworking, dedicated to succeeding in life. I mean, think about it. When your culture consists of over 1,000 years of persecution against you, of trying to make it when you're a very small minority, hated minority, and you're trying to succeed in life, that's going to develop a culture of go-getters. I mean, for lack of a better way. They're not going to be a lot of lazy Jews when that's the case, because they all would have died a long time ago. And so it just kind of led to a culture that very much succeeds in this world. And that's another thing, is like success in this world is more highly valued in Judaism because of their views of the afterlife, how they differ from like Catholicism. I mean, we see it like between Protestants and Catholics in the Protestant work ethic and things like that. This is not some great conspiracy, but it basically is just simply a matter of reality and historical fact. And so you get Jews that are going to be very influential. They're going to succeed in life. That's not a religious thing, though. It's more of a sociological thing. And so the religious beliefs and morals of those people are going to vary greatly. They're not always going to be the exact same. In fact, they're going to conflict a lot of times. So you're going to get Orthodox Jews who very much disagree with the morality of maybe a more liberal Jew or an atheist Jew, to use that term. And so I think this explains a lot of the influence. And also I think, though, what about the fact that often it's influential in things that we would consider as Catholics immoral, like pornography, things like that? I think actually Sigmund Freud said this well. He said, because I was a Jew, I found myself free from many prejudices which restricted others in the use of their intellect. And I think that that's something to go for as well. Like they don't necessarily, you know, and by the way, Freud was not a practicing Jew. He was not embarrassed. He wasn't like, you know, many of these atheist Jews actually want to reject their Judaism, want nothing to do with being, Marx was like this. They wanted nothing to be, you know, associated with Judaism. That wasn't necessarily Freud, but he wasn't a practicing Jew. He wasn't a believing Jew. But he's kind of saying, like, you know, because he's outside the kind of the dominant culture, which means the dominant cultural mores, he's more willing to look at things that perhaps the Catholics, the Christians were not willing to look at. And, you know, Freud's psychology is awful. And so, you know, you can argue that. But what you see is, like, just because so what happens is with that kind of the anti-Semitic crowd, the noticer crowd, is if something has Jewish origins or Jewish people support it, therefore they say, okay, we have to reject that out of hand. And I just don't think that's the case. Two examples of this are, for example, in Austrian economics with people like Mises and astronomy, things like that, with cosmology, with Einstein. Both of those, Mises and Einstein, were both Jews. Again, they weren't Orthodox Jews, practicing Jews, like full, you know, Einstein's a funny character. I've read a biography by him recently, and his relationship to Judaism is just kind of all over the map in his life. But anyway, it's not like all of a sudden the general theory of relativity is a Jewish idea. It's just a scientific idea that had to get proven, and it was. Now, what's funny is, here's a good example of how kind of the anti-Semitic crowd really makes a mistake. When the general theory of relativity by Einstein first came out, people thought the relativity meant relativism, which meant a moral relativism. And so they rejected it for that reason. Of course, if you understand the general theory of relativity, which nobody fully does other than Einstein, but like if you understand the basics, it has nothing to do with relativism. And so, but people said, oh, like, look at the Jew who founded, you know, who started general theory of relativity, relativism, and the whole thing is silly. Likewise with Mises and his Austrian economics, if you look at it, you can argue it on the basis of whether or not it's true or not. Does it really reflect reality and how people act? Human action, you know, economic actions, things like that. I personally think it's very good at explaining that. And the fact that a Jew was a big promoter of it means nothing to me. And it shouldn't mean nothing to any Catholic. Because what matters is it true or not? Not whether or not a Jew was the first to kind of think it up. And so I think that among the noticer anti-Semitic crowd, there is this clumping of all Jews together into one whole and pretending that they're all, that like basically their influence is part of a vast conspiracy. Not like necessarily even a crazy conspiracy, but just like it's kind of just the movement towards, you know, it's a movement among Judaism, whereas you're going to find great diversity and arguments among Jews about many of these things. I also think, and I think this is something that's sad, is among the anti-Semitic notice crowd, whatever, is there's a real degrading, a diminishment of the real persecution that's happened against Jews over history. I've mentioned this before, but the reality is the Jewish people have been one of the most persecuted races, groups, whatever you want to call it, in history. Does that mean today they are as persecuted as they were in the past? No, I actually don't think so. I think Christians are the most persecuted class in today's world. If you look worldwide, persecutions happen more against Christians than against any other group, including the Jews. In fact, I would say since the Holocaust, since World War II, the Jews have not suffered any great persecution, not on any large scale. I'm sure there are, you know, anti-Semitic people here and there, and they've had, you know, I'm not just like Christians in America have that happen. But that does not mean, just because today there isn't a great persecution against the Jews and there is against Christians, that doesn't mean there haven't been historically. And I think just to act like it didn't happen, there's a reason why, because this all comes together. If you deny that, then what happens is you start to explain a lot of the Jewish influence on the world with faulty premises. The fact is the reason Jewish culture is like it is has a lot to do with their history. Their history, particularly post-temple, revolt in 135 that got crushed, all those things. They've been a persecuted nomadic race, basically, not really in the true sense of nomads, but they've had to move around a lot. They've been greatly persecuted. They've only been allowed to do certain jobs often. And so therefore, that develops their culture. To act like that isn't a major reason why the culture is the way it is, and act like it's some inherent thing in their race or in their religion, I think is wrong and as a problem. Now, that being said, I also think that it's true. One of the big things you'll hear, kind of the noticer, anti-Semitic crowd, whatever you want to call it, they'll talk about is the narrative after the Holocaust, the problems with that. And I agree with them in a lot of ways in that aspect. The Holocaust was horrible. And the whole debate over whether it was 6 million Jews, I think, were killed, I think often is a matter of just trying to diminish the persecution of the Jews throughout history, including at the Holocaust. But the reality is after World War II, after the Holocaust was revealed to the world, there was a collective guilt among the West, and especially in Germany, and I understand that, and perhaps there should have been on some level. And I would say actually there should have been on some level. But in response to that, all of a sudden it became the fact that now we no longer could criticize Jewish people. We could no longer criticize the Jewish race, the Jewish religion, or anything like that. It was like basically we had to act as if anything that they did was right and nothing was wrong with it. And I think this is like a pendulum had swung. We see this in a lot of places, but in the Catholic Church as well. That I think among Catholics, including Catholic leaders, there was this idea that yes, persecution happened, and often it was done by Christians and given a Christian veneer, a Christian support. And so now we have to resist that, but let's go the other way and basically say we don't have to even evangelize the Jews. That Judaism is basically just can be left alone, that it's a dual covenant theology, the idea that their covenant is still binding and still salvific. These are things that just simply aren't true. And so in our guilt, our worry that we don't want to have a return, another Holocaust, we no longer allowed ourselves to criticize Judaism or any Jewish people, for example, in Israel or things like that. So we had this pendulum that swung. And I do think that's an issue. And I think that's the reason why there's an increase in anti-Semitism, increase in like the noticer phenomenon, whatever you want to call it. And I mentioned that in my article today that, you know, the people who are trying to diminish or deny the Holocaust, I understand what they're trying to do. And I'm not completely against what they're actually against, which is the narrative that came out of the Holocaust. What I am against, though, is the idea of let's just go ahead and throw away, you know, historical facts or historical, you know, events, because we're trying to make another point, which is that since the Holocaust, there has been a refusal to criticize in any way the actions of Israel or Judaism in general. Okay, so what is the Catholic kind of, what do I think is, how do I think we navigate between anti-Semitism and Zionism? How do I think we navigate? I think ultimately a lot of it comes down to don't play identity politics. That's basically what we're doing here. It's a Marxist leftist thing to play identity politics that, okay, this group of people is one whole and should be treated as one whole. And anybody who's a member of that just, you know, is other if they're not in our group. And if they're in our group, then they're one of us. And I think this is a real problem because you see that this is a soft form of racism in a way. Here's the reality. All Jews aren't good. All Jews aren't bad. We have to treat each person as an image of a God, as an image of God, and also as a fallen son of Adam. This is who we all are. And so to act like some group, the reality is the world's so much more messy than that. There isn't one, there are powerful people in this world, don't get me wrong. But to act like there's one group that's like basically controls things is simply not the way the world works. and to engage in identity politics of saying, okay, the Jews are to blame for this. I just think that's ridiculous. It's irrational. It's not Catholic. It's identity politics. It's the same as the left saying, you know, whites are the cause of our problems in America. And so if you fall into that, that you see a Jew under every corner, every stone, you know, no matter where you go, there's Jews behind it. There's Jews that are the problem here. It's really the Jewish problem, whatever you want, you know, the Jewish problem, whatever you call it. I think you're engaging in the same identity politics, the Marxist type of identity politics as the left when it comes down to it. And so I don't think Catholics should do that. Now, is it okay for a Catholic to be a philo Semite, a lover of the Jewish people? I mean, yes, on some level, as the fact is that, you know, they're made in the image of God, so we should love them as that. The Jewish people, I by the way, I know there's an argument, and there's a good argument in a lot of ways, about the disconnection between biblical Judaism and modern Judaism, because things did change once the temple was destroyed. There's no question about it. And, you know, the Talmudic Judaism is not the exact same as biblical Judaism. At the same time, it is in a line. I mean, there is a line. And so a Catholic who has a certain appreciation of Judaism as, you know, the religion of the Old Testament, I think that's okay. I just think you got to be real careful. Got to be real careful not to take that too far and act like modern Judaism is the equivalent of biblical Judaism, or more importantly, that it's still salvific. It's still a valid covenant. I mean, the fact is that the new covenant fulfilled the old covenant, period, end of story. Israel is Jesus Christ. That is the new Israel, is Jesus Christ, is the church. And so I think ultimately, what I think as Catholics, our attitude towards the Jews should be our attitude towards all people who are not Catholic. We should work for their conversion. We should want them to convert to Catholicism. Some Zionists act like from biblical passages that because there's talk about the conversion of the Jews as a corporate body at the end of the world, that somehow that means we kind of leave them alone. We don't have to do anything. That's not the case. The end of the world could be a million years from now. What about all the Jews until then? Their religion, they need to convert to Catholicism. And if you look at Jews who have converted to Catholicism, they will tell you this as well. And so the problem is you have the Zionist. They discourage conversions to Catholicism. They don't want to evangelize Jewish people, which is awful. That goes completely against St. Peter, the apostle, St. Paul. I mean, they preach to the Jews first. They work for their conversion to Catholicism. That's what we need to do as well. On the other hand, I've noticed a lot of the anti-Semite crowd, the noticers, whatever you want to call them, they suspect converts. Like, I know there's people who like think Edith Stein, they don't like her, because they don't think she kind of retained too much of her Jewishness or something like that. And you see, they have suspicion. And this is a historic thing, by the way. And there's some reasons for this, because if you look back in the Middle Ages and stuff, the forced conversions of the Jews, a lot of the Jews were not really sincere about their conversion to Catholicism. And so therefore, there was reason to suspect that they weren't really practicing Catholics. However, in modern times, to act like somebody who's converted to Catholicism should be suspect if they're Jewish. You see this. I mean, I literally, there was a video made by a couple crazy people, like suspecting that I have a Jewish background. And they're like, I'm probably not really truly Catholic I've done my genealogy back hundreds of years. And so if there are Jews, if I have any Jewish ancestry, it is way back, or it's a convert, you know, or something like that. So, but the point is they were suspecting, and it's this idea that, oh my goodness, you know, because he's saying certain things, you know, he probably is actually a secret Jew or something like that. That's ridiculous. That's anti-Semitic, frankly, to think that, okay, somebody who is Jewish converts to Catholicism, we have to suspect them of not really being Catholic. They're probably still secretly Jews. That's ludicrous. So ultimately what we want to do is we want to work for the conversion of Jews. And, you know, really, I think it's that's just like we want to work for the conversion of Muslims. We want to work for the conversion of atheists. We want to work for the conversion of Buddhists, everybody. So I think that's ultimately what we are here about. Okay, let me go ahead and get, I got some comments here I wanted to, and questions from the live chat. Again, I want to encourage people to join the live chat and ask these questions and comments when we do this. John asks, what defines irrational and rational suspicion, Eric? Good question. I would just say, honestly, if If the suspicion goes beyond what the data, what the evidence, what a understanding of history of things that happened, then it becomes irrational. For example, if a Jewish person converts to Catholicism and you suspect them of not really converting, that's irrational. If you have no data, if all of a sudden they start doing things that are like completely like, you know, going to the synagogue still on Saturdays or something like that, okay, fine. But it's irrational to suspect somebody just because they have a Jewish background if they convert. Okay, Gus TV 123 says, me, evangelicals seem to be Zionists because of heretical eschatological beliefs. Absolutely. And this is what frustrates me so much when Catholics embrace this. This idea that they believe that the end of the world, Christ will not come back until the Jews get back to their homeland, rebuild the temple. That is nonsense, people. That is nonsense. There is no biblical, theological, Catholic way of looking at that. But a lot of evangelicals buy that. That's why they support the nation state of Israel, because they're trying to further the second coming of Christ. And the funny thing is, a lot of Jewish Zionists, people in Israel, they use that to their advantage. They basically, you know, kind of let the evangelicals think that because they'll support their political viewpoints. So, okay. Let me see. Oh, I kind of lost that for a second. Let me pull the next comment. John, again, I'm wondering, is it a positive? Actually, I don't know. I don't really understand that, this question. Something about, is a positive externality that actually Nazi or other Jews dominate Israel or greater Israel in the view of the Catholic Church? I mean, I personally think that I don't have a problem with the existence of a Jewish nation state just from in our modern context. Obviously, what I really want is every nation to be subject to Christ the King. That's the goal. But I think we know lots of nation states are not right now. Most, if any, are. Maybe, you know, obviously America is not. I want America to happen to America. So I don't have a big problem with the existence of a nation state. I think the problem is, you know, what there are, if they're treated differently than other nation states. Okay, KF Gabrielle says, was there any reason for the pogroms, or was it spontaneous hatred? I mean, I think ultimately most of it was irrational. Most of it was because the Jewish people were the others. They were scapegoats. I mean, if you look in what happened in Russia, I think there's ultimately, first of all, there's never a Catholic justification for if you basically go in and kill a group of people who are, I mean, there's a system of justice that needs to be followed. So if all of a sudden, let's say one Jewish person commits a horrible crime, to go in then and attack the Jewish ghetto and kill people like that, that's never justified. It's just wrong. So I would say, I haven't studied every single pogrom in the history of pogroms. So I don't think anybody has, but I would say the vast majority, if not all of them, were illegitimate and should not be, you know, support. They were persecutions. They were evil. No matter what the given reasons were, they were evil. Eric S. Hey, another Eric S. There are a lot of Holocaust denial going on trad social media, and it risks discrediting traditional Catholicism. That is not meant to support or defend the era of Zionism. You know, Eric S., how can it be that I agree with you completely as another Eric S., one to another? That was not me who wrote that, by the way. I do think that this is a problem for traditional Catholicism, that we do see an increase of people who are wanting to resist, like the woke elites and stuff like that, and they want to be based. I honestly see this. I mean, call me a boomer, fine. I don't care what you call me. If your goal is to just basically be based, I don't want to be like, you know, the boomers who accept, you know, Zionism. So I'm going to go all in the other way. That's a discredit. What I do notice, though, is that trad Catholic priests are very much not part of this. I'm not saying all of them. I'm sure there's a few, but when I've spoken out, for example, against, you know, the whole desire to be based by saying things that are anti-Semitic, Holocaust denial, I get trad Catholic priests reach out to me and say, thank you. In fact, some of them will then run it in their bulletins at their trad parishes because they do not support this. And I think that should tell you something. And these are younger priests too. I'm talking about like priests in their 30s, 40s. These are priests who have been well-formed. SSPX, FSSP, Institute, whatever the case may be. And they're not happy about this development. And so I would just say that as a point of conscience to those Catholics, young, particularly young men Catholics, who are flirting with anti-Semitism, flirting with Holocaust denial, things like that, your priests are not supporting you. And that should tell you something. And by the way, the popes and the priests and the bishops of the 1930s wouldn't support you either. So I think we should keep that in mind. Okay, John, there has been persecution of many groups. Why should the church be more concerned with the persecution of the Zionists or other groups of Jewish non-believers more than other groups of non-believers? I don't think we should, but I do think that historically, there's been more persecution of, in the Western world, in Europe, there has been more persecution of Jews than historically over the past 1,000-2,000 years than any other group. That's just a historical fact. And so that should be something we notice to talk about the noticers. And so that, but today that's not the case. And so we should be concerned with anti-Semitic persecution, but we should also be concerned with persecution of Christians. Unjust persecution of any group, we should be concerned about. Okay. Palomeros, did ever occur to you, probably not, that the term anti-Semite is just like Islamophobe. Why are we morally required to like hostile religious groups? The lingo is a stealth weapon. Don't use it. Again, that's a debate about the term. If you think of a better term that can be used, I will use it. The fact is there are people who are anti-Semitic. And so, you know, that's just historically true. So I'm not going to support it. And, when you say morally required to like hostile religious group, we're morally required to love our neighbor, period. And that includes the Jews. And so if a Jew is being treated unjustly, we are morally required to be against that. Period. End of story. Just like we're morally required to be against the persecution, unjust persecution of Muslims, Catholics, or anybody else. And so I just don't see this idea that, like, again, it's a debate over the terms, which I think gets away from the point. The point is we're required to love our neighbor, no matter who they are. KF Gabriel, I love this. Lots of comments today. Why were they ejected from one nation after another? Was it due to spontaneous hatred or more reasons for these expulsions? I mean, I think this was asked earlier, but yeah, I think it was a lot of reasons. I think it was not spontaneous hatred. Usually what happened, if you look at the history of most of the pogroms, I always want to say program, I know, pogroms and other, ejections from nations, it typically was an excuse often when, like, for example, here's a great example. When Jews were persecuted in one area and they would flee to another area, typically it was the poor Jews, they would flee to an area and they would basically start to overwhelm a city, the ghettos of a city, something like that. And then what would happen is people were not happy about that. And so they'd start to say, we got to get rid of the Jews. And so they'd kick them out again. Now, also, it had to do with the fact that the Jews often were playing both sides. For example, financially, if a nation was at war with somebody, often Jews who were not supportive necessarily of the Catholics in charge of them versus the Catholics in charge of somebody else, they'd play both sides. And so then when a conflict was over, then they would be like, let's go against these people who weren't completely supportive, weren't patriotic enough. So there's lots of reasons. I would say in general, most of them, it was an illegitimate, persecution against them for reasons that they were a small other group that could be easily kind of used as a scapegoat in a lot of ways. Not that they were perfect, never did anything wrong, but the response to them was often overwhelmingly in proportionate to what they were doing. Okay, I'm not even going to read this guy's. It's like TH3, I guess I will read WR3CK. Mr. Sammons, if your definition of anti-Semitism includes both something immoral, racial hatred, and something outside of morality, noticing, then there is bound to be a problem in your discourse. Again, we're talking about definition. I'm not saying, my point is that we don't have a great term. And so I'm just saying anti-Semitism and noticers. And by the way, noticers aren't just outside of morality. I think that's a better point. Obviously, racial hatred is immoral, but I would also say it's immoral to suspect people of immorality, of things that are not true, because it's a crime against justice. If, for example, a bunch of Jews do something and then you blame the Jews on it, that's immoral because it's unjust. It's unjust against innocent Jews, Jews who did nothing. So there's not a problem in my discourse because they're both immoral. The noticers often, who aren't necessarily outright, they don't have a racial hatred necessarily, they do things that are immoral and because they're unjust. Okay. August TV 123. I remember reading that Einstein was fascinated with the concept of transubstantiation. Yeah, Einstein was just a character when it came to religion, because he did believe in God, and this is something to say, you know, he had this understanding of the universe, and he saw as very orderly, and he believed there was a creator, somebody who put it into order. And he supported the Zionist cause in a lot of times, but he wasn't completely on board a cheerleader for it, like a lot of Jews were. He wasn't really a practicing Jew. But, you know, so it's interesting. And so the fact that he was fascinated with the concept of transubstantiation, I don't doubt that. I remember reading that, but I don't remember the details. Are Soros and Son actual Jews or atheist Jews? I would guess that they're probably atheist Jews. I don't know their specific practices. Eric S. again. Okay, I would actually like to see a list of pogroms that took place in Western Europe during the last 500 years, Hitler excluded. I don't see any records of any during the 1600s or 1700s. That's a great question, because in my studies, it's mostly been focused on the 1800s, 1900s. And you also see in the Middle Ages. I don't know for a fact. I mean, the late 19th century, it was awful in Eastern Europe, in Russia. Because, I mean, a lot of reasons, but the Russians actually kicked out all the Jews, but then they took over Poland, which had Jews, and that caused all these, you know, they were definitely very anti-Semitic and wanted to get rid of the Jews. How many there were during the 1600s, 1700s? I know that, like, for example, Protestants, they also would do activities against the Jews as well. So it wasn't just the Catholics who were doing it. So after Protestant Reformation happened, it still continued. But I would be interesting to see a list. I agree that would be interesting to know. So, okay. Well, I'm going to wrap it up here. Ooh, we went over an hour. That's good, because we had a lot of good comments. I do appreciate that. I appreciate it wasn't, you know, just completely, you know, take over by the Anon accounts or something with their memes or whatever. But I do think this, like I said, I think this is an important issue. It's very difficult to have a good discussion about it online, because, like I said, it's just not something that happens. I think as Catholics, I want now, my last thing I want to say is to traditional Catholics. I attend a traditional mass, consider myself a traditional Catholic. And I do think as traditional Catholics, we have to be careful of not falling into becoming just reactionary, where we simply see the problems of the woke left, problems of progressive Catholicism, the problems of modernism within the church, and say, okay, we're just going to go the other extreme. We're just going to reject all of that, and which is fine to reject all that, but then don't accept alternative falsehoods. I think that's what my article is about this morning at Crisis Magazine. And I would just encourage, we have to love each person as the image of God. We have to love our neighbor. And so let's not play identity politics. I think that's what the left does. I think as Catholics, that's not what we should be about. Okay, I'll leave it with that. Until next time, everybody, God love you.